ready.
Oh, yeah, and so Dailies doesn't kill me. Ready to go, Paul.
I think it noise canceled your clap out for me.
Probably.
So hopefully it recorded.
I love it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Drop at DFT. You are in season eight of The Drop at DFT. This is our South by Southwest recap and kicking things off, opening night film, Roadhouse editor. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Doc Krotzer, ACE, to The Drop at DFT. Doc, thank you.
Hi, Nancy. Thank you for having me on.
I'm over the moon. So let's go back, oh my God, an uncomfortable number of years for people as young as you and I to say.
It's almost a mathematic impossibility how long we've known each other, right?
I cannot believe you were editing Glee when you were like 8 years old, Doc. That's bizarre. That's bizarre. But that is how far back we go. I mean, it honestly.
2009-ish.
That means 15 years. Yeah, God, you were such, we were just babies running around on Paramount. Like, who let us in there?
I don't know. I still wonder about all that. I don't know how I got through the gates.
Because you were on from the very beginning of the show, right?
I was on almost from the beginning. I came on to the pilot during the director's cut.
Uh-huh.
There was still some stuff to be shot for it. And there was still like a lot of work to be done to the pilot. So I came on before it had been picked up for, or no, I actually, I, that's not true. It had just been picked up for the season, for the initial order of 12, but there was more work to do on the director's cut. And then that's when I came on and I assisted for those first 12 of season one. The full season, I think, was 21, and not including the pilot. And then during those 12, I got some opportunities to cut some scenes, which led to cutting some full acts of episodes for the other editors. And then like, I don't know, maybe six months later or so, thereabouts, it got the order for the rest of the full first season, the back nine episodes. Remember when TV shows were that many episodes?
Yeah.
And fortunately for me, because there were 21 episodes in that season and the way the schedules worked out, they needed a fill-in editor for an episode, and I got it. I got my chance in the back nine to cut an episode, and then that led to being just in the rotation for the rest of the time.
I am so,
or for the first four. I did the first four seasons and then I left.
You're like, I was over it. Like, I'd had enough Broadway.
Well, it's a high school show. I was there for 4 years. I feel like there's something really like poetic about that, you know, and then I graduated. I don't know.
I love that. But then, okay, so this is why I'm obsessed. You went from one super obsession of mine, which is musicals, into another obsession of mine, which I don't know how many people actually know and understand, that Sons of Anarchy was based on Hamlet. Like, it's a total Hamlet story. But like, you got to bring it home with Sutter Inc. like the last season. How cool was that?
It was a blast. It was such a fun show. And at the time for me, like coming off of Glee, it was such a great thing to go do because the shows could not be more different from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think in this business, like there's always a chance of getting pigeonholed. It happens naturally. So I was really excited about going and doing something that was rough and violent and not a high school musical type show, because I felt like it would show that I can do more things than just what at that point I was known for. You know, when people would look at my resume, the show that everyone recognized was Glee. So, but it was so much fun. I did the last two seasons of Sons, made a number of great friends, some of whom are still really close friends to this day. And really for me, like the longer I've been doing this, that's the stuff that I remember the most. You know, you forget about, oh, which episode was that or what happened, or, you know, positive and negative things related to the show. I think they sort of dissolve away sometimes with time, but it's like, but you remember the people and you remember that you had a great time and that it was a special time. And we had a lot of fun, those last two seasons.
I bet, but I hope you got so many props or something. Like,
I wish I got a jacket or, you know, a cut or a motorcycle, you know, that would have been
you
a nice
know,
wrap gift, but I think maybe we got hats.
I did not learn until after the show wrapped. It was like a year or two after the show wrapped that I learned that I lived like around the corner from Teller Morrow and where they filmed.
Oh yeah.
I was so disappointed in myself. I was like, how did you not know that all that Harley noise that you were like, oh, old ladying about was actually one of your favorite shows, Nancy?
Right. Oh, bummer. Yeah, you could have just been there would be people like on we were not cutting at that point. They had the cutting rooms there initially for a while, but by season 6 and 7, we were off site. But whenever we would go down there, there'd be fans gathered outside and stuff. It was a wild thing.
Okay, so to me, there's this huge, insanely large common thread in your career so far, which, like, again, you're like a baby. We're babies. We're just babies, Doc. But, like, you have some of the best soundtracks ever that you've gotten to, like, work on these shows with just absolutely killer soundtracks and, like, projects. Because, I mean, what? I mean, no big deal. Shotgun Wedding with J-Lo, like, you know? And then we'll come back to Roadhouse because, yeah, I get it. Opening night film with South by, that's the season of the drop that we're in. But, like, how does that all come together? Are you a music nut or is it just kind of like, let's tempt this in and see where it goes?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge music fan and kind of amateur musician, and I love anything where music is part of a component of kind of how you're doing the storytelling. So I think I gravitate to those. I think also because I worked on Glee early on, sometimes certain projects that have music components of them or heavy music components, maybe I get meetings on because of you know the background, and sometimes I think it just organically comes up in conversation with people when I'm meeting on jobs about how passionate I am about music, and oftentimes we'll connect on that, and then you can go down a rabbit hole talking about you know music for the rest of the meeting, and so I don't know, I think it just sort of naturally has happened, and it's been a great thing. I always love when there is something like whether it's the bar bands in Roadhouse or you know, a more kind of formal musical type situation, but it's always a fun challenge.
Wait, I don't know this about you, that you're a musician. Tell me that like you're an upright bass jazz musician or something. Give me the
Oh, I
scoop.
wish. I play guitar and bass, and I've played in like when I was younger, I played in like rock bands and stuff. But
Man.
I'm like a I'm a musician to people who aren't real musicians. They're like, oh wow, you're a musician. But to like real musicians, I'm not a musician. That's the space that I exist in with music, and I'm happy to be there. Like that's a fun, it's a fun like hobbyist plus type space. I could get up and play with a cover band at a bar, you know, and like work my way through it, but that's about the ceiling for me, you know.
You are. You're like Higgins from Ted Lasso or something. Like he goes to Paris and he has his moment. So, okay, let's dig into Roadhouse. And my first question, biggest question, serious question. Doc, you're from Missouri. I mean, Roadhouse had to have meant something serious to you when you grew up. When you got the script and you were like, this is in Florida? How did that go for you?
Yeah. No, it's funny because I knew the movie from growing up, but it wasn't in my like, you know, my five that I would watch endlessly forever.
Oh God, are we gonna do the Letterboxd Five? Tell me.
Oh, sure. I mean, it always changes a little bit for me, but it is pretty consistent, I think. So Back to the Future, Clue.
Yes! That's gonna be here in LA, by the way. The stage play of Clue.
I saw it last summer, I think it was, or last spring, and it's awesome. If you love the movie, you will love it. Okay, so Back to the Future, Clue, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Ghostbusters, and then the fifth slot is sort of ever-changing depending upon which way the wind's blowing of like probably 10 other movies. But
I
those are the
love
movies that made me like I think want to make movies and explore that, you know, and
you.
that's so.
Ghostbusters impacted a lot of people, which, P.S.,
Yeah.
welcome back.
to the land of repertory programming, because I think it's March 30th, or I forget what the date is, but Quentin bought the Vista and they're doing original Ghostbusters night at the Vista. So
I saw, I'm going to be out of town. Otherwise I would be there on the 70 mil. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, I know. Oh, I'm so excited for you to be back here. Like, this is so cool. Anyway. Okay. So then less serious tip, or no, just as serious. Anyway, how did you go into Roadhouse then? Like, I know everyone says, well, I start with the script and like, but I mean, when you're dealing with people who, reading the interviews, like with Jake Gyllenhaal and Doug Liman, talking about how they just really wanted to work on something together. And, you know, I know there's some improv that happens on set. Like, how did that all kind of start coming together? Like, between the script, first set of dailies, stuff like that. Like, I mean this as a compliment. It looks and feels and rides a lot like a Roadhouse. Like, being in the opening night theater at South By, this was just like the energy for Conor McGregor, the energy, the how do I put it? The fandom for Jake Gyllenhaal and an audience that loves Doug Liman, like action movies. It was every single punch that landed came with a cheer, and there was just so much fun in that theater. And it felt like that, even watching it again, coming back home, watching it on Prime, I was like, this is just a damn good time. Where did you start with that? Because there is so much. And I want to come back to the point that there's no monster truck in this, which was like a huge cornerstone of the original.
I know.
Where did you start? Script, dailies, like, where do you dig in?
I think the script was the roadmap, as it tends to be. With the fight scenes in particular, the script wasn't really the roadmap. The script was the incredible, like, choreography and rehearsal. Garrett, who was a stunt coordinator, and Steve Brown, who was the primary stunt guy, they dialed this stuff in so much. And then, of course, they'd present to Doug, and then they'd work together, and they'd find all this stuff together. And then Doug would figure out a way to shoot it. I think what we're talking about, the same thing, what you describe is like, it felt like the movie, it felt like Roadhousey. It's like, so it would feel, even though the stuff was like very meticulously crafted, it was then captured and shot and put together in a way so it would feel much more like wild and loose and Roadhousey. You know, like all the fight stuff had to be really well planned and well shot, but Doug, as a filmmaker, never wants stuff to feel too polished. So then there's kind of a step as you're putting it together where you're trying to do it in a way where it still feels like it's spontaneous, and it's not a perfectly crafted like shot necessarily in the classical sense, you know. So that it has that like sort of feel like it's just happening, and whoever was there with the camera is capturing it.
That was, for me, every single time I watched it, I walked out thinking, this makes me think of Go, like all the way back, like early Liman. So many of these fight scenes felt like the chase scenes in Go. And then also Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I friggin' love that movie. And when I saw Donald Glover was like turning it into a TV series, I was like, but I love Donald Glover and I love Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Are those going to work? They work so well, but like, just thinking of the fight scene where they're in the house and like drinking it, then it ends up with like the broken glasses and the orange juice. It's just what you just said. It felt very natural like this, because it's almost too intimate to not be real.
And I think that's like what, to me, kind of what you're saying is what I saw a lot in Jake's performance, was this like very grounded version of Dalton that works in a movie that is otherwise at times, you know, completely larger than life, especially like when Connor's on screen. But I think Jake from Go was all about a very grounded version of the character, and that allowed us to have kind of these moments, I think, especially in the first, before things get really wild, whether you're talking about like the scene you mentioned in the parking lot. For me, I love all the scenes between Jake and the little girl at the bookstore. And I think those scenes go, they do a lot of heavy lifting in a really invisible way that you don't notice to connect you with his character. And that serves you for the rest of the movie, you know, because you're seeing these little morsels of humanity in this guy. So, going back to what you were talking about with some of the fight scenes, the other thing I would be remiss not to mention is Henry, the DP, the way he shot the fight scenes, because the very specific, unique style, obviously, lots of like camera panning, in ways that you're really not used to seeing in fight scenes. And he has this very specialized rig that he uses. And if I try and get too detailed talking about it, I'll sound like an idiot. But it's sort of like a movie. It's a camera on a gimbal, but it's handheld. And it allows him to move in a way that is different than if it were just a Steadicam rig, if it were on a dolly, if it were a motion control rig, or if it were handheld. Or it has a different feel than handheld. It allows them to move like if you were handheld, but it's much smoother. And I think that also kind of gave the fight scenes this interesting visual style and texture. And then coupled with the way that we shot them and stitched them together, we were able to sit in angles that traditionally in a movie you wouldn't be able to use in fights, because you would see that the fist and the face of the fist was going to hit were a foot or two apart, and it, you know, pulled punches like how fights have been done forever in movies. But we did this version of fights where, and it, you know, from pre-planning, shooting, and then also in post, like a heavy, heavy lift for everyone. But I think they turned out really well, where we'd film it as a traditional Hollywood stunt pass. So pulled punches, you know, the choreography, and Jake and Connor were very rehearsed on the fights. I mean, everything was so precise. But then Connor would step out, Garrett, the stunt coordinator, would step in with a pad and hold the pad where Connor was, or where on Connor's body Jake was to be hitting for that moment. And then we'd do the takes with Jake hitting him, the pad. And then we'd switch it out. So Jake would leave, pad comes in, Connor comes back in, beats the crap out of his pad. And then we do a fourth pass with Jake and Connor, where they would go through the whole thing, but at about this speed. Mm-hmm. And for that, because then you get what it looks like when skin gets smushed and your face is distorted from impact and things like that as a reference. And after we had all that, and then in some instances, we do some other tricks and methods too, but those were kind of the key four elements we needed. And then we'd stitch them all back together so that you wind up having these impacts where it really looks like you just filmed someone being punched. And in the shot, there's nothing about the shot that is like CG. It's a comp of, you know, Jake's fist from one take that matches his arm from another take, and then Connor's face from, you know, so it's putting them all together. And that was a really long-winded explanation, but we were talking about the fight stuff, and I think that kind of, you know, speaks to that.
No, that's a huge part of especially why we do these drop episodes, like education forward, explain it all, credit where credit is due. Yeah. Because I was going to say, like, your VFX are so seamless in here, because I again, reading one of the interviews that Jake did about this explained exactly that. And I was so like kind of proud of him, of like, you know, he didn't explicitly say like, this is VFX, to have to stitch all these things together. And those are terms that a lot of our audience, like, we get a lot of mail about people asking like, can you dumb it down? Like, what does that mean? And stitching these shots together is sending all four of the types that you just explained into VFX, so they have these things to work with to, I mean, this is why we do the breakdown, so that people can see how they then have to layer those things together. And just hearing Jake like walk through it, like, or not hearing, but reading it, and him, you know, of course he's not going to fight Conor McGregor, but like right, he did, he was like, there was one punch that he landed. It was like, he was coming in with a left and he was like, you know what? I think I'm going to do it with a right. And he hit him and he was like, we use that. That was a good red spot on my face. We use that. But just to hear that, because I was looking at these, I kept going over some of these fight scenes, one in particular, like actually in the UFC ring where you see Jake, I was wondering about exactly the cameras and the setup, because UFC has all this coverage and these zoom angles. And I was wondering how you were doing that, if it was speed ramps, if it was a lot of how it was filmed, and just trying to match those different types and bringing that into then a narrative feature, because he has so many fans. And there's just a lot of video game elements that are coming into features. Like, even if you think about the first Wonder Woman, like, you know, she does this slide push forward and then the lasso. And it's like, it's interesting. Like, you have a different audience now with, you know, a huge interest in UFC or video games. And you can use those different elements that were being leveraged in other mediums in a narrative feature to help tell that story. Is that kind of what you guys were playing with, or was this really more of a, how do we, like you said, it was choreographed a certain way?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. I don't think we were ever like going into it thinking about it like on a macro level like that. It was much more like pragmatic. Like, how do we make this look real? You know, punch by punch, kick by kick, you know, and each one took kind of its own special sauce. And special tricks and all the standard fight tricks too, of, you know, speed ramps, shifting people in frames, what else, taking frames out here and there, you know, and a thousand other different ways to make it exciting and interesting too. But yeah, I think like with the UFC stuff, it was its own challenge because they had a very limited time to shoot at the real UFC fight. And they didn't know when they could shoot because they had to do it between matches. But you don't know when a match is going to end because somebody has to like get knocked out. So they're like, everyone's waiting around. And it was like to do that Jake walking in shot. I think we got to do it three times. I think one of them we did three times, two times on the front of him and then once on his back. And that was it. That was all we got. And then when he got in the ring with the other actor, they were able to do that choreography, I think, twice, and we were out. And we did have all the UFC footage from their cameras. I believe we only used one of their, you know, they had an agreement that we were allowed to use it, but I think we only used one of their shots. Otherwise, it was all our cameras. And then there was a different, there's like a separate octagon, you know, their ring, that we went to for all the tighter shots with Jake and the guy he was fighting, and did a lot of it in that ring because it's the same dimensions and it looks the same. And then we just put in the full crowd from the big UFC ring.
I can't believe that there hasn't been like a pop-up Roadhouse, like an immersive experience situation yet. Like,
yeah,
I kind of want to go to there. Like, you know, was it Paul Thomas Anderson did like a pop-up licorice pizza that never went away? It's actual record store.
It would be great. I mean, they built that Roadhouse. We shot in the Dominican Republic. They built the Roadhouse, but it got torn down. It didn't have indoor plumbing, so it couldn't stay. That was what I heard, which is really sad because it was a cool building.
That, I mean, that looks like a good time. It absolutely.
Yeah. I guess it did wind up having a boat in the side of it, but you know.
You know, I mean, and a gator. Hashtag no spoilers. Yeah. Was the gator real?
All the boats and stuff were real. We didn't actually fling, you know, that million-dollar boat into the Roadhouse. But yeah, all the boats for the most part were real. And almost all the boat stuff was done practically. You know, there were a couple CG shots, a couple CG takeovers, but Doug shot it all on the water and actually, you know, did most of it for real, which was pretty cool.
Okay, so totally switching gears, or maybe not, because I'm not an editor. I just know that I love them. Editing for comedy. because that was probably my favorite surprise about this movie, was that it got to be funny. Like
Good. I'm
Jake,
so happy to hear that.
it was so, I mean, I will forever stan Patrick Swayze. Absolutely. One of the best gifts that cinema has ever gotten in too short a period of time. Loved the original, but this, I was kind of almost telling people, like, just you can love it, but like this is its own universe. It's almost like Dalton gets to be a Bond, but like, you know, he gets to be funny Dalton. How was that? Like, how do those beats land with so much action?
I mean, of course, you have to credit the writers, Chuck and Anthony, and Doug for capturing the comedy in the way that he did. We were always looking to make sure that the movie didn't get too serious. Like that the movie never got to a place where it felt like the filmmakers were taking themselves too seriously. Because I think if you there's a really bad version of Roadhouse that could be made where you take it too seriously and you tell this like really dark insular story about this tortured guy and there's no comedy. And I don't know that that's a movie that people really want to see. But so we were trying to always have a sense of humor about it and always be mindful of what movie we were making and of course mindful of the original and why people like the original. So finding the balance tonally of the comedy was one of the things I spent the most time on just to try and get it right. Because if you go too far with comedy in a movie like Roadhouse, then there are no stakes at all. And then the fight scenes mean nothing and then the action scenes mean nothing. But if you don't go far enough, then you're taking yourself too seriously. And then suddenly people think it's a different type of movie. And then they're comparing it to different types of movies. And it's like, no, this needs to be fun. So whenever the movie felt like it was starting to get really dark, and not that it doesn't get dark, but dark and serious, we looked for ways to undercut that and to surprise the audience with humor. And I think like one of the best examples is the guy who plays Mo, who Dalton breaks his arm in the slap fight.
Yeah, oh God, he was,
Towards the end, there's a
well, it's
moment.
about 20, 25 minutes away, that guy.
Yeah, that guy.
So
He's
great.
so funny. And he was just gold. Anytime we had him in a scene, we knew that we had that in our pocket if we needed it. And we used most of it. And like the scene where Dalton, spoiler, kills a guy and he like carries the limp body out, throws it in the back of a truck, and then you cut to Mo, and Mo's like, oh, okay. And has this whole run of please don't kill me. It was like that's to me is like the perfect example of what we were trying to do. There was this really dark scene before it. Someone killed someone else. So instead of going further with that, we're going to interrupt it with humor just to remind everybody that like this is still supposed to be fun and funny, and don't take any of this too seriously because we're not.
Yeah. I think that was like hugely important, and thank you for pointing that out. I didn't get, I mean, I will probably watch this four more times before the year is over.
That's awesome.
I, Doc, I'm not even kidding. I have already watched like 130 movies this year. It's a sickness.
Wow.
It is, I am obsessed with Turner Classic Movies. I'm obsessed with new movies. Like, I just give me all of it. And especially when something like this has the ability to enter zeitgeist, where, you know, especially the scene that you're talking about, where it's like, oh, so now he's like killing people. Like, you know, there's the discourse and whatnot, but that moment, exactly what you're talking about, I think that was pivotal for me to be like, oh, they're okay, yeah, this is a comedy, people. We have Dalton ripping out throats back in the 80s, okay? Like, we have that movie. This, especially too, like, and I'm gonna walk you right into it, but like bringing Conor McGregor into this, like you had to earn that with like him walking out naked and the money in the boot and then arriving in Florida. Like, at no point did I take this man seriously for anything other than the serious business he was about to take out. Like, he showed up to be comic relief, but only in the juxtaposition of like, this dude means business, you know? But it was like you threaded the needle, I think, is what I'm trying to say. But how did you earn that walking in, knowing people were gonna walk into this movie like, ready for their favorite UFC guy.
I think it was a lot of feeling it out and trial and error. One of the things that I'm always doing is I'm trying to pull people in to show things. If it's just a scene, even, you know, people who work on the movie but aren't watching it every day, you know, like our post PA watched the movie so many times, and he was one of the people I'd always be like, "Hey, Doan, can you come check this out? What do you think? Is this funnier than the last time you saw it 2 weeks ago, or not as funny?" You know, things like that. Or sometimes it would even just be other people who were on our floor where we were cutting the movie, in New York, and just bringing them in, because putting it in front of someone who hasn't seen it, and seeing how they react is the most honest reaction. Like, for those of us who do this for a living, and I'm very aware of this, like, I'm constantly trying to find ways to basically be able to erase my brain every time I watch something, so that the next time I watch it, I can receive it as a fresh viewer. And I've gotten to be about as good as at doing that as one can be without having some magic pill that actually erases your brain. We should talk about that though, because I'd love that for like my favorite movies, to be able to just like take a pill so I forget Ferris Bueller's Day Off and then watch it for the first time. But anyway, so
I call those nieces, nephews, and godkids. I make them watch my favorite stuff, so I can like watch it through their eyes. That's my magic.
That's awesome. That's a great way to do it. And, but that's, I think that's similar to like what I'm describing, where it's like,
exactly,
when you put it up in front of other people, you're watching it through their eyes. And then that informs you, and you see things differently and you feel things differently than when you're sitting in your room by yourself, or when you're sitting in the room and it's you and like the director or the producer or whatever. It's like, 'cause we're all kind of on our island. We're making this thing, and you get the more honest response from people outside of that island. And then of course, as the process goes on, and when you get into things like audience previews, where we're showing, where we haven't finished the movie, but we're showing an approximated version of a finished movie to an audience of strangers, and then seeing what they react to, what they like, what they don't like, what they laugh at, what they don't laugh at. That tells you so much. And what doesn't work for them, you know, the moments where you think you're going to get a laugh and you don't, is like, that's the most informative. It's painful, but it's such a great part of the process, because I think, especially like with a movie like this, where we were kind of walking this tightrope with the tone of it, we were able to see sometimes with the previews, certain things went too far one way or the other, and then we could pull it back, or we didn't go far enough. And we could feel that the audience like more than embraced. There were some things with Connor where we were like, oh, is that too big? Is that too over the top? But we could tell that we had the audience at that point. So then we also embraced those things and kept them in.
Okay, but how many deleted scenes are you telling me there are? That's what I'm hearing.
No, there aren't that many, actually. There really aren't that many deleted scenes. It's kind of crazy. There was a different ending scene shot. There's a different ending scene shot that we just decided we didn't really need. I'm trying to think what else. There were a couple scenes that we dropped along the way. There were a couple scenes that were in the script until the last minute, but dropped before shooting. But by and large, not a lot of omitted scenes. More like, as far as, you know, the omission of things, it would be more like, oh, a scene became half as long and we just got rid of a whole mention, or the second half of a scene that was talking about something else we realized was redundant, so we just ended the scene much sooner. Things like that, you know, to just tighten the storytelling.
But at no point was there a monster truck driving through a car sales floor. No.
Sadly, no.
All right. I know.
There was, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this. Because you already referenced a moment from the original, I am going to say, since we're talking about deleted scenes, the moment at the end when Connor, Jake's on the ground during the final fight and Connor kills Brandt.
Uh-huh.
We shot an alternate version where he ripped his throat out.
No! Yep. My plea to Doug Liman is, whatever capacity that you have for that to be like a bonus feature somewhere, let's just, you know.
It was like the exact same shot. I mean, it was literally like a one-to-one swap. It's like, we have the same angle. We have one version where he cracks his neck and he dies, and we have another version where he rips his throat out.
Man. Oh,
And it
okay.
was in for a while. It was in for some of the previews.
Did they not react well to it? Or like,
You know, I'm trying to remember exactly
I mean,
why
to
it
be
went away.
fair.
I think it was one of those things where like it was another tricky thing about this one was how much do you reference the original and when and what's the right amount that because if it goes too far, it pulls people out of the movie they're watching and makes them think about the other one too much. And I think, if I remember right, I think that was ultimately kind of the audience feedback we were getting for that moment, coupled with some other factors. I think that was all kind of part of the consideration that ultimately led to it coming out. But honestly, like seeing, I saw the movie the other night. There was a screening here in LA, and seeing it with an audience, like that moment totally would have played. I kind of wish it were in.
I don't know. I mean, like, again, di very different audiences. I love a South by audience because, like, we are just pot committed. Like, it's not Sundance. It's not, Toronto. It's not Cannes. It's like South by is there for the ride. And I honestly, it is. It's a different, to me at least, like, Dalton gets to be his own Bond. Like, this is a different story. You could do a Roadhouse in Iowa. You could do a road, you know what I mean? Like, it could be or go anywhere. And I feel like just what you said, had I seen the throat ripping, I'd be like, well, that wasn't that, I don't know. But like with an LA audience who's very like, I would like to see this in a theater. Thank you. Yes. Like, I don't know that we're as pot committed, if you will.
Agreed. And that's one of those things. And it's like that's the climax of the movie. So if you're going to put something like that there, you have to be 110% sure that it's going to work for everyone.
Yeah, I'm gonna high five that decision. I know that it had to be a hard one,
It
but
was so hard because it was such a great reference to the original. But I think you're right. I think where it landed, I mean, I love the moment in a vacuum, but I think how it turned out is the right way for the largest audience for that ending.
how long did you guys get in the edit?
Oh man. Well, we were dealing with actor strike as well, which prolonged post, but I think the total post for the movie was a year and a half. About a year and a half, including the strike, the actor strike, which we were still working on the movie for a period of time during the actor strike and then hiatus for a bit and then came back to do ADR and the final sound mix after the actor strike was over. So we finished it in January of this year.
This is only March. I mean, huzzah, I can't
Mixing
believe.
mid-January. So it was, And we, it was tricky because we were waiting for the actor strike to be done because we couldn't finish the movie. And then it finished and it was like, okay, all hands on deck. Like we jumped back on and we were doing ADR for the 6 weeks leading up to the mix or thereabouts 6 weeks. And it was like, we had like so much ADR in this movie. And it was like four sessions a day sometimes, just like back to back to back. Because like the bar is a character. So the group ADR for the bar, for all the bar patrons, is like super important in a movie like this. It doesn't just sit in the background. It's just like the bands. The bands don't just sit in the background. Sometimes they're part of the story and they're part of the action that's playing out on screen. So there was a lot to do with all of that to make it feel like they were all part of the same cloth,
Well, hey, are you allowed to talk about what you're working on now?
Sure, I think so. I haven't signed an NDA. Or actually, I probably have, but that's okay.
Because I'm mostly excited. I would love for you to take something to South by 1 year and experience kind of what I'm talking about. These are some of the best movie lovers out there because we do, and drop folks, you will hear about this later on in the season, but there's so many panels and sessions that take place during the day that, like I always say, I come back with a new master's degree at the end of every South by Southwest.
That's so
But
cool.
then like 4 p.m. on, we just get to go enjoy screenings. Like we are your audience. Like anything you put in front of us, we chose it because that was the mood we were ready for. And it's like, especially when it's, no shade to the big movies. Like this was such a great time to walk into this screening. But then especially indie films like what you're working on now, like it's just you have a captive audience that is ready to cheer for new filmmakers, veteran filmmakers. Like, it's so exciting, and I hope you get to take one of these to South by one time.
So this movie I'm working on now is called Miss You, Love You. It's written and directed by Jim Rash, who did The Way, Way Back, which is one of my absolute favorite movies of the last 15 years. And it's this really beautiful, sweet comedy drama. Allison Janney and Andrew Rannells are in it. And it's very different than Roadhouse, which is great. It's a very contained movie with a very small cast. So yes, definitely the opposite of Roadhouse. And it's fun for me to be coming off of one thing that was so different and do something else that's really different. And I'm super excited about the movie.
I trust anything and everything with Allison Janney in it.
Me too. I will watch her do anything. She's just incredible. Absolutely incredible.
I forget, it was maybe like 2018 or 2019, but she helped produce this tiny little community theater production of Steel Magnolias.
Oh, and cool. it was
so great. And I'm just like, that's somebody who's just really literally living out their art and applauding it and championing it wherever it's going to take place. And I got to say, a belated congratulations to you for being an ACE. I didn't even know that had happened. But like, I really hope that I have not blathered on too much and you would be willing to come back on the drop for this.
For anytime.
Any number of reasons. I can't wait to catch up with you and hug your face and pick your brain on all the stuff.
I can't wait to see you in person again. It's been far too long.
Oh, but with that, I think we're going to close out this opening episode of the South by Recap. Thank you so much for joining us today, Doc. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Nancy. I'm glad you liked the movie.
Me, I love it. And everyone, it's streaming on Prime now. Go check it out. We'll see you next time on The Drop.